ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 10, text number 47 and 48. 46 you'd like to read also? Okay. Ya etat punyam akyanam vishnur viryo pabrinhitam kirtayet shraya shutva karma pasher vimuchite. One who hears and chants this narration about the omnipotence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is certainly liberated from material bondage without fail. Can you hear back there okay? Yes. Itadya adi purushasya murgrinda lilam daityendra yuta pavadam prayat patena daityat majasya chasatam pari pararasya punyam shut vanubhavam akutobhayameti lokam. Prahlad Maharaj was the best among exalted devotees. Anyone who with great attention hears this narration concerning the activities of Prahlad Maharaj, the killing of Hiranyakashipu, and the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Nrsingadev, surely reaches the spiritual world where there is no anxiety. And this is 48. Yuyan riloke bataburi bhaga lokam punana munayobhya yanti isham grahan avasatiti sakshat gudam param brahma manushalingam Yuyam Driloke Bhataburi Bhaga Lokam Punana Munayo Pibyanti Yesham Grihan Avasatiti Sakshat Kudham Param Brahma Manushalingam Yam, all of you, the Pandavas, Niloke, within this material world, Bhata, however, Buribhaga, extremely fortunate, Lokam, all the planets, Punana, who can purify, Naya, great saintly persons, Abhiyanti, almost always come to visit. Sham, of whom? Grahan, the house. Avasati, resides in. Iti, thus. Sakshat, directly. Parambrahma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Manushalingam, appearing just like a human being. Translation, Narada Muni continued, my dear Maharaj Yudhishthira, all of you, the Pandavas, are extremely fortunate, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna lives in your palace just like a human being. Great saintly persons know this very well, and therefore they constantly visit this house. Purport, after hearing about the activities of Prahlad Maharaj, a pure devotee should be very anxious to follow in his footsteps, but such a devotee might be disappointed, thinking that not every devotee can come to the standard of Prahlad Maharaj. This is the nature of a pure devotee. He always thinks himself to be the lowest, to be incompetent and unqualified. Thus, after hearing the narration of Prahlad Maharaj's activities, Maharaj Yudhishthira, who was on the same standard of devotional service as Prahlad, might have been thinking of his own humble position. Narada Muni, however, could understand Maharaj Yudhishthira's mind, and therefore he immediately encouraged him by saying that the Pandavas were not less fortunate. They were as good as Prahlad Maharaj, because although Lord Narsingadev appeared for Prahlad, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his original form as Krishna, was always living with the Pandavas. Although the Pandavas, because of the influence of Krishna's Yogamaya, could not think of their fortunate position, every saintly person, including the great sage Narada, could understand it, and therefore they constantly visited Maharaj Yudhishthira. Any pure devotee who is constantly conscious of Krishna is naturally very fortunate. The word Nirloke, meaning within the material world, indicates that before the Pandavas, there had been many, many devotees, such as the descendants of the Yadu dynasty and Vashishta, Marichi, Kashyapa, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva, who were all extremely fortunate. The Pandavas, however, were better than all of them because Krishna himself lived with them constantly. Narada Muni, therefore, specifically mentioned that within this material world, Nirloke, the Pandavas, were the most fortunate. What is very endearing in devotees is humility. When we find this actual humility, we notice, especially noticeable is when someone doesn't expect any respect. It's, as I mentioned the other day, something Radhika Raman Prabhu pointed out that I had never thought of before. And that is, it's one thing to give respect to everybody. That can be done. I could arrange that. But to not expect anything in return, that's a whole other thing. One thing is very active, the other thing is very subtle. It's just, I don't expect it. But there's a power to it. There's power in subtleties. And there's a great power in that. I wrote an article years ago about escape velocity. It's a phenomenon that takes place in rocket science. Not that I'm a rocket scientist, far from it, but the fact is that in order to get away from a particular heavenly body, a rocket has, there's a calculation of the escape velocity. And the bigger the planet, the stronger the thrust has to be to get away from the environment, because there's a greater gravitational pull. And I was thinking about that one day, and I can't remember why I was thinking about escape velocity, but the fact is that our ability to escape the material world is hampered by, my ability to escape the material world is hampered by my own false ego, and the bigger it is, the stronger the escape velocity, or the more escape velocity is required in order to escape. However, if the it becomes smaller and smaller, then it's really easy to break away from that. Sort of a principle. And so humility is something we find, and as I said, it's endearing. One place I always notice it when I hear the Chaitanya Bhagavat is when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decides that he's going to hold a drama. And he invites all the devotees. These are all his associates, eternal associates, and incarnations, expansions, and so forth. And he comes as Mahalakshmi, does Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he tells all the devotees that we're going to perform this drama, and he said, only devotees who are 100% pure can participate in this drama. And then the devotees, the likes of which Haridas Thakur and Vaitacharya, they begin to look at the ground, draw circles on the ground with their feet. Like, okay, what's wrong? It's like, I'm sorry, I won't be able to participate, they say. As I'm not qualified. I can't participate. When I hear that, it's just so endearing. This is something that devotees relish so much. That even the Mahabhagavats, for instance, when you read Amarajivana by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it's so attractive. Many years ago, I used to have programs at my house, and the devotees would come over, and I discovered this, the Sharanagati book. It was translated by a devotee who's expert in Bengali. And And so I said, let's read this together. So we started reading it. We got through the first part, which is about humility, because it starts off with Amar Jivana, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about all his faults. I'm constantly telling lies. I'm happy when I see other people suffering. And when other people are successful, I become morose. He's admitting his faults, or the faults of a conditioned soul. He has no faults. But this is the interesting point here that Mahaprabhu points out when he teaches Sanatan Goswami about the symptoms of bhava. And in the 9 symptoms of bhava, which you'll find in the 22nd chapter of the Madhyalila, he mentions that as a devotee becomes more advanced, he feels himself less and less qualified. And the great pure devotees like Bhaktivinoda Thakur express this feeling, even though they're more and more qualified, they're more and more in contact with Krishna. And then when the devotees heard this section, they said, we have to have a copy. I was surprised at how enthusiastic they were. I want to hear this more. And that's why I say it's attractive and it's compelling. It draws us in when we see humility. Quite the opposite when somebody is exhibiting their skills, whether on a subtle level or a gross level, if they're thinking, I'm so great, watch this. Then there's a kind of way in which there's already enough competition out there. Nobody needs to see your greatness. We can figure it out for ourselves. But it's paradoxical then that when somebody expresses true humility, that people appreciate it, they're compelled, they're attracted to it. It actually draws us closer, and it actually exhibits their qualification, that they're so humble. And when we see this in devotees, we become aware of the fact that this can't, only for some time can it be imitated, and generally the imitation is perceivable. But when somebody is truly humble, then it is noteworthy. So Yudhishthira was like that. And here the devotees, and Narada Muni's telling him, actually, Yudhishthira, you're saying you don't have any qualification, but let me point, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 let me point something out to you, and that is that Krishna is living in your house. He can go anywhere. It's a big, huge universe, and he moves around as he likes. But he stays with you, and sometimes he acts as your messenger, and he does menial work for you because he loves you so much. He's attracted to you. And not only that, everybody else can see it but you. That's why, he's pointing out, all these great souls are coming and they want to stay in your house too. And it's not just because Krishna's there, it's because you're the one who attracted him. So what do you have? Bhavadvida Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhuta Swayam Vibho Tirtha Kurvanti Tirthani Swantak Stena Gadabrata. And one time Yudhishthira told this to Vidura. And he said, you're a holy place personified because you carry the personality of God within your heart. Wherever you go, you create a holy Tirtha. You purify the Tirthas, and wherever you walk, wherever you sit, that becomes a Tirtha because that you're carrying the Lord within your heart. And another striking aspect of this is just that Krishna is a person. It's not readily apparent to any jiva walking around the world that God is a person. It wouldn't occur to anybody in the environment of the material world, which is described in the Bhagavad, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Abhayam Dvitiya Bini Beshita Syad Ishara Petasya Viparya Yosmiti Tanmaya Tat Buddha Abhijatam Bhaktyaika Yesham Guru Devatatma. There's a way in which the material world is fortified by a pervasive agreement amongst jivas that we won't discuss God, and we won't allow him in. If he tries to enter, we'll keep him out. Shonaka Rishi notices this at the beginning of the Bhagavatam when he says, Svavid Varahustakarai Samstata Parashapasu Nayat Karnapatil Peto Jato Nama Godagraja. He says, nobody's talking about Godagraja, the Supreme Personality of God. What are they talking about? Because these people are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. It's Shonaka's bluntness. He said, what do they like to discuss? They like to glorify other people who are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. But if you bring up the personality of God, you'll get a lot of arguments, specious arguments against it, against the idea of why it can't happen and why there is no personality of God, and that God ultimately is subservient to us because he's impersonal, whereas we're personal, blah, blah, blah. It goes on, and there are entire philosophies developed in order to fortify this feeling that the universe revolves around us. And it's a kind of opposition to the Lord. Bhayam dviti abhinipeshita. Ishad apetasya means it's wrong-headed. You've turned the wrong way, and you've become a competitor to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So now you find in bhakti, the pinnacle of understanding, it turns out, is that God is a person. And not only is he a person, he's the source of Brahman and Paramatma, all the other ways in which someone through, at the very best, mental speculation can come to understand that there might be a Supreme Personality of Godhead. For instance, one might come to impersonal understanding God's all-pervading and pantheistic idea by negating variety, or saying that actually there is some kind of force that's driving the universe, but we consider it impersonal. That's not too hard of an idea to come to. My mom used to come to that by gardening, and she'd say, just look at the flowers. I mean, there's got to be some force in the universe. And others have written extensively about such things. Indigenous tribes have worshipped the all-pervading spirit and so forth. And someone who does meditation, a Prabhupada says, even a common person, he writes in the Bhagavatam to Srila Prabhupada, that a common person can understand that there's some intelligence coming from a super spirit. You can perceive it for yourself. So then you can say, yes, God is there as the super spirit. He's providing some intelligence. But the personality of Godhead, that requires a connection with pure devotees who actually know him, because Krishna doesn't reveal that aspect of himself to others. Although, in parentheses, Prabhupada points out in the verse I just mentioned, in which he points out that one can perceive the super spirit, that logically one could also understand that there's a personality of God because, and this is the logic, God is not our order supplier. Now, the super spirit is our order supplier because he's providing us with intelligence and obviously many other things. But since God isn't an order supplier, you must then extrapolate and understand that he must have his own separate existence as a person that's above that. And then one could come logically to a conclusion that he must have a personality somewhere else. And it's rather refreshing, actually, that one might come to such a conclusion. It's rare. However, by coming in contact with the Bhagavat and the devotees who are in love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, this idea, he's hanging out with the Pandavas in their house. This is something that comes only when there's a group of pure devotees or a completely pure devotee that attracts the attention of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu one day meets a person named Raghupati Upadhyaya. And he's some kind of scholar. And he's a great devotee too. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a charming interlude, because it's not really explained that much in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but Mahaprabhu recognized that he was a devotee scholar, and he said, recite some verses. And one of the verses that Raghupati Upadhyaya recites is, others may worship the impersonal Brahman effulgence, some worship the Mahabharata, some fear material existence as their mainstay in life, but as far as I'm concerned, I worship Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard the Supreme Brahman is crawling around as a little baby. This is the kind of mood or understanding one gets when one associates with the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, for sure, that God is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's Akila Rasamrita Sindhu. He has unlimited ways of reciprocating with the devotees. And it's pointed out again and again in the Bhagavatam. For instance, in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami says, Itam Satam Brahma Sakana Bhutya Dasyam Gatanam Paradaivatena Mayashitanam Naradarakena Sakam Vijaru Kritapunya Punjaha. Different kinds of people are realizing the Lord in different features. So he said the impersonalists, they realize or they're worshipping the Brahman effulgence, because that's as much as they can understand. Then he says there's some that they worship the Lord in grandeur in the Vaikuntha planets, and they see that this is God. He's worshipped through a reverential Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, reverential prayers and Dasya Ras. So, but then, Sakam Vrajaru Krita Punya Puja, there's others, like the coward boys here who he's describing, who have accumulated heaps and heaps of Bhakti Sukriti. And they're playing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a friend, and wrestling with him, eating with him, walking with him in the forest, and so forth. So, first of all, the humility of Yudhishthira. And it is the mainstay of devotional service in the Bhagavatamrita. Sanatana Goswami describes how dainya, or utter humility, accompanies or is always present in equal proportion to one's advancement in bhava, in bhakti. In equal proportion. It's not that one becomes more advanced in devotional service and then starts to think that I'm the center of the world because I know so much about Krishna. And secondly, Go Premanande Sashibudi. And secondly, this very charming conception that Krishna hangs out with his devotees. He could go anywhere, do anything, but he likes it. He likes when he likes to be with his pure devotees and spend time with them in their very house. And he's that much of a person. That he can actually stay with you in your own house. I mean, there's he sits with them, he talks with them, takes prasadam, or cohorts in many different ways. Now we'll take some reflections or questions to expand the conversation. Hari Sankirtan Prabhu, if you'll just wait 2 seconds, same rules that apply at ISV apply right here in the Naimisharanya forest.
So, can you just elaborate on that logic that you said, like, because Krishna is not the order supplier, so he has personality. I mean, how do we actually explain that? I mean, that's not very clear.
Why don't you look up the verse? Where's a pundit in here? Some pundit. You know the verse? Anumapakai is the last line. Second canto. Mataji, you can sit on the AstroTurf if you want. It's not illegal.
On that, another question is that we worship deities at home, right?
You have deities at home.
So we have, like, so there's Krishna there, but how do we have the personal connection, feeling that
Krishna's at home, and how do you have a feeling of a personal connection with him at home? Well, when you serve the deity, that's when you'll get a personal thank you, Prabhu. We have a lot of pundits in him. We have some super pundits, too. So this verse is Bhagavan Sarva Bhuteshu Lakshitas Swatmanahari Drishyar Bhudyaribir Drishta Lakshanar Anamapakai. And I'll just read you the pertinent section because you asked about it. Although it is a progressive logical presentation here, so I'm sort of, I summarized it before. So here it is. So far as common sense is concerned, we come to the conclusion that there are three identities, namely matter, spirit, and super spirit. Now if we go to Veda, or the Vedic intelligence, note, Vedic intelligence, we can further understand that all three identities, namely matter, individual spirit and the super spirit are all dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The super self is a partial representation or plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Bhagavad Gita affirms that the Supreme Personality of Godhead dominates all over the material world by his partial representation only. Is everyone okay? Say yes. Okay. God is great, and he cannot be simply an order supplier of the individual selves. Therefore, the super self cannot be a full representation of the Supreme Self, Purushottam, the Absolute Personality of Godhead. Realization of the super self by the individual self is the beginning of self-realization, and by the progress of such self-realization, one is able to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead by intelligence, by the help of authorized scriptures, and principally by the grace of the Lord. The Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary conception of the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the further explanation of the science of Godhead. So, if we stick to our determination and pray for the mercy of the director of intelligence sitting within the same bodily tree, like a bird sitting with another bird, as explained in the Upanishads, certainly the purport of the revealed information in the Vedas becomes clear to our vision. And there is no difficulty in realizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. So, the logic is there, just what I said. Prabhupada makes this point, thank you, Prabhu, that the definition of God is not that he's an order supplier. Bhagavan means he's also the supreme enjoyer. So if we're perceiving him in his feature as super self who's giving us intelligence and whatever else, however else he's maintaining us, that can't be the complete conception. So logically there must be a personality or an aspect of God that's beyond that. That's the logic. And as far as developing personal relationship with your deities, if you just serve them, because deity worship's very sweet. And, I mean, you know, if you go down to Lloyd Bazaar and ask for little shoes, like this big, they won't be surprised at all. They'll provide them. But if you walk into Macy's or something like that in New York, say, I need a pair of shoes this big. And it's like, what's wrong with you? Are you playing with dolls or what? There's no conception, but those who know the Supreme Personality of God, they become charmed by the deity because Archa, he's a mercy incarnation of the Lord. He assumes a form that we can handle. And in handling him, you start to see his smile. As Kapiladeva says, when the devotees come into the temple, they see the smiling face of the Lord, and they're charmed by it. There is a way in which when we're doing any kind of service, at some point, we'll have a moment of connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that will last not just a lifetime, but eternally. In other words, you might be offering some strawberries to the Lord, putting a toasty leaf on, you offer the plate, and then you look up and you suddenly realize, wow, they're actually here. And, you know, they're like, what am I doing? And they'll reciprocate within your heart and give you that feeling. Oftentimes, you know, if you're bathing the Lord, if you have the fortune of doing the bathing, and, you know, just getting it all ready, a little chandan, and then you put chandan in the conch, you put in some rose water. I mean, everything smells good, so you're around the Lord, he's smiling, and he's, you know, everything's pleasant. And then tulsi leaf, flower with chandan on it, and then, you know, you say some mantras, Ganga Chad, Jamuni Chaiva, call the holy rivers and everything. Then when the bathing starts, you're pouring the water, and you watch it. It's gliding down the body of the Lord. He's wearing a little gumcha, which is cool too. And then, you know, you watch all these beautiful substances, you know, kind of coming down the Lord, and maybe the tulsi leaf sticks on his shoulder or something. He's like, wow! And, you know, the sun's coming up, there's incense, and you just, all of a sudden, you just feel like, there's nothing better than this. And then if any neighbors look in, they're going to go like, what's wrong with you? You're in your own world. You're already in the spiritual world. You know, especially during the winter, I have to go to my front yard a lot to collect flowers for my deities where, you know, people are going to work back and forth. And, you know, they see me out there, probably in a lungi and a chadar, And I, you know, I'm picking flowers. Nobody's out picking flowers in my neighborhood, ever. You know, because people don't pick flowers. They pick plants that are drought resistant. And, you know, they have gardeners come by and mow and blow. But they're not interested in the flowers. When we planted our garden, I said, I want everything that's got scent. Both the summer, winter time, it's always got to be flowering somehow. Because we're out there, we're in it for the flowers. So you see me out there with a huge colander. I'm collecting flowers from my garden, and people are driving to work, just getting ready for another day of drudgery. And they look over, and there's some guy with a bald head in the front yard picking flowers. And it just, what is this? And what is, I mean, that's the feeling that comes to us when we're worshiping the deity. It's like, this isn't from this world. This is from some other world. And so Bhagavan has to reveal himself, and he does it through service. Atashri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Graham Indriye Seva Mukhi Jivado Swayam Eva Spratila. You'll get a spurti. A manifestation of the Lord will show up in your heart, in your mind, when you serve him. And serving the deity is highly authorized. Krishna talks about it himself, which is also really nice. He gives a whole explanation of how to serve his deity form in the 11th count of the Bhagavatam. It's complete explanation. If you read through it, you'll figure out how to do everything. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Prabhu, you talked about how the material civilization is actually towards minimizing God in the beginning of the lecture. So, you know, there's also the tendency I see in my heart, you know, because maybe hearing that spirituality is an internal process and, you know, you should not really expose it, it's more internal. There's a tendency I've seen that, you know, although I consider it a very internal process, but when I'm going out into the world, I kind of, you know, minimize or, you know, kind of hide it in some sense. I don't let it out, which kind of I feel blocks, you know, my own spirituality. So how can I...
Well, that's an interesting phenomenon. There's a few points. One is we know that it's an offense to preach to people who aren't interested because they profane your idea. They'll just spit on it, and then it degrades it. You expose it to the atmosphere. It's like there's a phenomenon in science. Every time you do an experiment, the experiment changes, or the object of observation changes. You can't look at anything in its pristine. It's like as soon as you look at something, then the theater changes. So when you expose your faith to other people, it's risky because you have to have really strong faith to be able to expose it to them and have them not appreciate it and not be affected by it. So it is one of the ways in which we're asked to protect our faith in the holy name is just don't give it to every single person who's not interested. I mean, that admonition is there. And in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, it's an astounding verse that says, when you have some deep realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, don't reveal it even to your own mind. Don't reveal it even to your own mind, because your mind's like, nah, that's nothing. So it is a very internal process. And we do have a relationship with Krishna. That's one side of it. So we have to, we have two sides of Vyavaharika and Paramarthika existence. You know, one thing is we may go out into the world and work with all kinds of people, and they can't really, they don't even know exactly what it is. It's different about us, but we may not be exposing to every single person that, hey, by the way, you know, there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead. They'll be annoyed immediately unless they have the Sukriti for it. So Bhagavatam says, you know, you can act officially with people, including, you know, co-workers and everything. Yes, sir, very good, sir. That sounds good, sir. But that's only official. Inside, you're holding your own realization to yourself. But you have to interact with the world. If you go, as Hridayananda Maharaj likes to point out, on the Vyavaharika side, if you go for a job interview and they say, where are you from? And you say, I'm from the spiritual world. Then they'll say, get out of here. You have to go in and say, you know, I'm Joe Blow. You know, I come from Kokomo. And whatever it is, you just have to tell them like the party line. It's like, I am my body, and I'm a hard worker, and I love you guys. And that's part of the dual existence we live in the material world. On the other side, you have a place you break away to. You know, we have like a secret thing going on in one way. Another way, we're broadcasting it everywhere. But it's kind of like somebody who sees a UFO. They go out in their backyard one night, they're standing out there, you know, smoking their pipe, and they look out, and there's a UFO lands on their grass, you know. So they run in the house, they go, hey, I just saw, you know, Martians. They just landed on the back, and everyone's like, get out of here, Larry, you know, you're crazy. So then, you know, he looks through the paper, and he's like, finds a UFO society. So, like, other people, I see it. Did anybody else see it? It's like, yeah, and they'll go, he'll drive miles to get there, and secret society, the people who saw the UFO. So for devotees, it's like they've seen something other people don't see. That's why we're in here. Of course, this is the Dom, but in most places, we're kind of sequestered. You know, we got a little house inside, ching, 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 you know, Hare Krishna. And on the outside, it was like, would you guys be quiet? You know, stop this racket and, you know, stop this nonsense about the personality of Godhead. It's a very rare thing. And the other side, it's actually edifying to go out and give Krishna consciousness to others in appropriate ways, because then we actually see the people are hankering for it, and when we see how enthusiastic others are to take to Krishna consciousness, we might question our own enthusiasm and say, why can't I be like that? So both things are there, so you just have to be a little careful. And Chaitanya Prabhu?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I have two questions. I have this mentality, maybe I don't know why. I become humble with someone when all, and I see that, okay, I will get this thing from him. I will get this benefit. So maybe that's why I am humble. I am observing this thing. But how it can be natural that I can be humble to each and everyone? And the second...
one question at a time, if it's okay. Let's say we're interrelated.
That's quite natural. The gopis...
Hare Krishna. The gopis pointed this out when Uddhava went to Vrindavan. We just read this in the Krishna book. They were saying that, of course, you know, Krishna left us. They say, you know, when a bee is done with a flower, leaves the flower, when a boy's done with his girlfriend, he just leaves. They name a bunch of people. It's like, it's natural that I get what I want and I leave. And those who are aware of what motivates people, they can be a little humble to get what they want. But true humility is a little different than that. Humility doesn't also mean that you're just meek all the time. And it also doesn't mean that you don't assert yourself. Prabhupada points this out in the Bhagavad Gita. He said, Arjuna, was he humble when he went out and killed everybody on behalf of Krishna? Was he meek and humble? He was out thrashing everybody with his arrows and chopping them up, killing them left and right. But it was humility because he put aside his own personal agenda for the sake of the Lord's agenda. That's real humility. Like yesterday, when we were on Parikram, we went up to the Nrisimha temple, and we had to be a little forceful because the pujaris forgot to wake up. So we really made a lot of noise until they opened the door. But it was because we were going to see the darshan. So we say, why don't you just be humble and go away? It's like we would have missed darshan if we did that. And then we went up, and we had these kavachas to offer to the deity because and sanctify those kavachas. The deity wears them. Actually, Nrisimhadev wore them the whole... afterwards, the guy wanted to, you know, do his job and hustle us for as much money as he could, and he wanted five... He goes, give me five kavachas. I said, I'll give you one kavacha. And give me the... You know. I was appreciating him, and I was being humble, but I was assertive because I had my duty to do. So... the two things aren't mutually exclusive. It doesn't mean that because you're humble, you don't get what you want. In fact, a lot of studies show when you use nonviolent communication, you can assert yourself without being violent. You can be humble at the same time by appreciating that the and you don't offend their sensibilities. This is something I talk about in a seminar for book distribution and communication. If you talk from the soul and to the soul, and you remember who you're talking to, then there's a kind of natural humility that takes place, or that you'll assume, because you're not on the bodily platform when you do it. Do you have a second question?
Sometimes this idea gets to mind, or why can't you see that I do book distribution, why you don't respect me? Like Guru Maharaj, you told me that it is very difficult to get rid of this feeling that please respect me, give me respect. How we can?
Well, you can experiment with not taking any respect and see how you feel. This is something that you can experiment with. What, you know, do some service where, and you'll notice that your false ego is jumping up and saying, you know, I'm over here. Everybody look. But try it sometime and just say, look, I'm going to do this service and I'm going to make sure I don't get noticed. I'll do it without any spectacle or asking for anything in return. And notice when you do that where the reciprocation comes from and how much greater it is. First of all, you know, everyone else has their own false ego, or many people have some modicum of false ego anyway. So oftentimes you'll find if you assert yourself and you display your expertise, even amongst God brothers and God sisters, they may not appreciate it as much as you think. I mean, look at Prabhupada. You know, he was doing wonderful things, and all his God brothers, not all, many, some, were disrespectful of what he did, because it's hard to take when your sibling excels, especially if he was a grihastha, they were sannyasis. Like, why'd Krishna pick him? Why not us? You know, there's a lot of ways that people can become bent out of shape when you do well. And you know, and if you think like, well, listen to all these shlokas, blah 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 blah, and then everyone's looking at you like, yeah, right. Why do you have to have who needs so many shlokas? You know, it's not always cracked up to be the, you know, getting respect from people, because there isn't that much to be had anyway. I mean, who actually respects anybody in this world that much? But Krishna, on the other hand, he's so kind, he's so friendly, that anything you do for him sincerely, without expecting and wasting all that energy by trying to show it to other people, he likes it so much that, like, he'll love you for it. Even if it's a tiny little thing, patram pushpam param toyam, and Krishna says, okay, you're mine. Or, you know, you just express your devotion to Krishna in some way. That's why Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavatam, material life is hard. Nobody actually appreciates you for your service in the end. Family members even. He mentions Mrs. Sharma. She came and she had served her family for, you know, decades. They were all grown up. She said, now I want to be Krishna conscious. They said, no. You stay home and cook and serve us. And Prabhupada said, hey, she just wants to come serve Krishna. But now, after a lifetime of service, her family won't let her go away. So just remember where real reciprocation comes from. It comes from pleasing Krishna. And you experiment then, and just, like, don't take any respect. Let your ego take time out. A little time out in the corner. Face to the wall.
Haribol, if we are supposed to do a certain service and we, if I feel that I want some respect or some recognition, should I still do that service, or should I try to, you know, find somebody else to do it instead, for example?
Yeah, you can still do it. Just try to curb your... You know, there are some services where the service is to be recognized. And look at Prabhupada, he was an acharya. So he had to be recognized. That's a service. So that's a hard service, because Vaishnavas don't like to be recognized. Many Vaishnavas opt to not be recognized at all. There are a lot of Vaishnavas whose names aren't in the Chaitanya Charitamrita because they said, don't put my name in there. I don't want to be known by anybody. Because they're on such a subtle level of reciprocation with Krishna, when that comes up, that glorification, it disturbs their mind and it disturbs their bhajan, so they don't want to hear it. But other people, they have to be there. Like Prabhupada had to insist because he noticed, you know, books were coming out and they didn't put Prabhupada on it. They didn't put His Divine Grace had put A.C. Bhaktivedanta on the book. You still see some of these books around. And Prabhupada couldn't understand that somebody was influencing him and telling them, he's not the Acharya. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is the Acharya. You know, he can't be an Acharya. He's like, he's one of us. You know, he came from our people. You know, like, he's not anything. And so, you know, devotees got influenced. So they said, yeah, let's not make such a big deal out of it. And Prabhupada said, no, it's a big deal. I'm the Acharya. You have to put it on everything. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya, ISKCON. So that's humility, believe it or not. And it's also a service. And it's not about false ego and getting respect, but it's the fact is that unless you assert yourself as the Acharya and you say, you know, this is I'm going to be the leader of this organization, then the whole place will fall apart because you either frame or be framed. Other people frame it for you if you don't say who's the leader and what the mood and method is in the organization. Anyway, it was a long answer to a very short question. Yes, we have to do our service, even if there are some kind of anomaly within us that we want to be recognized, but then just practice, as I said to Chaitanya Prabhu, not taking unnecessary respect for your service. And another thing, I remember when I first joined the movement, I was going out on book distribution. My Sankirtan leader, Unamanyu, he asked me one day, you know, he said, so how did you do today? And I said, oh, I don't know. Because I didn't want to say anything, because I thought it would be more humble to not report my scores and just say I didn't, you know, I won't talk about it. And he chastised me severely. I'll never forget it. My first chastisement, second, in the temple. And there was a lot to go around those days. People didn't mind hauling off and yelling at you. But he said, that's impersonalism and stuff like that. He said, it's important to say how you did so other devotees can get enlivened. And then I remembered that. So there's a way to do things. It's not that you just clam up and you don't say anything, but you do it, but remember that it's for the greater good. Whatever you're doing, the Good News Action broadcast, don't get all conceited that, you know, I'm great. Remember you're an instrument. But that part of broadcasting what you did is to enliven others because you're an instrument for expanding the movement. Prabhu?
Yeah. Prabhu, you were telling about this point of skills, actually.
Skills.
Yeah, by showing skills, we demand respect subtly sometimes.
If we have skills, yeah, we demand respect. Yeah,
So my question is, we do use our skills in serving Srila Prabhupada and serving Krishna, but at the same time, how do we make sure that, you know, we don't expect any respect, and at the same time we are exhibiting this quality of humility?
So just remember where the skills are coming from. You know, you may be an extra madunga player, but if Krishna shuts your arm off one night, you wake up and your arm doesn't work. There's your madunga playing, it's gone. And any skill, any human ability is coming from God. And if you start thinking, I'm so great, I have a great voice, no one sings like me, I mean, where did you get your voice box anyway? It came from Krishna. Julie Andrews, one of the best singers ever. You know, Sound of Music. The hills are alive. And then, you know, she had a little problem in her throat. They did an operation and then her voice was ruined. She could never sing again. And so just remember, whatever gift Krishna has given you, it can be taken away at any second. Don't think that you're anything except an instrument for Krishna, whatever skill you have. And you can also note too, whatever skill you think you have, there's always somebody better. Always. As soon as you start thinking, I'm the best, and it's Krishna will arrange somebody else to walk in and go like, oh my God, I don't know anything. So just offer what you can offer out of, you know, sincerity. Krishna really doesn't care how skilled you are. He cares how you're offering from your heart what you do have. That's beautiful, and we see it all the time. You know, somebody, a devotee, maybe doesn't have such skill in singing. This is down in Puri last year. We were on our yatra earlier this year. And Rajendranandan Prabhu, he's not like an opera singer or anything like that, but he sang the Guru Puja. with such heart that we all practically started crying. I mean, nobody sings like that. He puts his heart and soul into it so much. Were you there? You were there. Was it profound? I mean, when I heard him singing, I was going like, I have no devotion for Prabhupada. Nor should I ever sing again. Because, you know, and he's not like a great singer. But he sang with such heart that, like, everybody's hair stood on end. So it's not what you do that's important. It's how you do it that counts. So skill doesn't really count. That's what, you remember when Brahma came and he wanted to see Krishna? He's like, so I'm here. Tell him I'm here. And then the messenger comes back, the doorman comes back and goes, Krishna wants to know something. He's like, yeah, what? He goes, which Brahma are you? He goes, what do you mean, which Brahma am I? Four-headed Brahma. And then Krishna called all these Brahmas with 8 heads, 1 million heads, 10 billion heads, and Brahma felt like a little mosquito in the presence of elephants. So that's Krishna's mercy when he does that for us, but we can do it preemptively if we always keep ourselves in that position that, you know, like, the skill's coming from Krishna, what do I know anyway? And that's how to be happy in life. As soon as you start taking that burden on that I know something, I am something, then Queen Kunti says, you're finished. As soon as you think you are something, then you have no more standing in the group of pure devotees. You become, you know, it's like somebody just ate garlic and then they come in into the room and everyone's like, ew! It stinks. You know, and anybody has that little false ego is like, yeah, I'm pretty good. You know, and all the devotees are like, oh my God, get him out of here. So you just like eliminate that ego and you become dear to everybody, and anybody can do that. It's just a matter of common sense, actually. Thank you very much, everybody. All goes Srila Prabhupada, all goes Srimad Bhagavatam. Go Premanande Haribo, Vancha Kalpadurvisha, Kripa Sinabe, Vachapatitanam, Pavani Bio, Vaishnave Bio, Namo Namaha, Nantakodi Vaishnavi Niki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. So we start our reading today at 10 o'clock. Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman. Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman, hey! Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman, Natariyar Marman.